Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Presented by Kangaroo Express.
Hey, it's the Root.
Jaguars Monday with J.P. Shadrick, Jaguars great Tony Baselli, and CBSSports.com senior writer Pete Prisco is sponsored by Ticket Exchange and by EverBank. Jaguars Monday starts right now.
Oh, yeah, that'd be even sweeter. And, you know, and it'll make it that much better because, you know, we're in the same division. So it's, hey, we ain't going. We don't want y'all to go either. You know, kind of that mentality. But we're going to go out and we're just going to continue to play hard. You know, Gus is not going to allow that to drop, and we're not going to allow that to drop. So we're going to continue to play hard.
Jaguars defensive tackle Sinderic Marks earlier today. This is Jaguars Monday. J.P. Shadrick with Tony Baselli in Jacksonville, and Pete Prisco, CBSSports.com senior NFL columnist, joins us over the phone tonight from Fort Lauderdale. Pete, good evening. What's up?
How are you guys? Boy, I tell you what, yesterday you watch those games and you sit there and you think, oh my God, Houston Texans, you know, not that good a football team, and then they blow out the Baltimore Ravens. And you know what? I'll say this, JP and Tony. When I went and spent time with the Texans in the summer, I thought they'd win two or three games.
You were wrong.
Bill O'Brien. Yeah, I know I was wrong. Bill O'Brien deserves a heck of a lot of credit for what he's done with that football team.
You know what it tells me, Pete?
What?
Is that there's just not that big a difference between the teams in the NFL right now. I mean, there's a couple teams that are at the top. I mean, the Seattles, the, you know, the Patriots, Broncos, you probably have to put the Cowboys in that category right now. But you look at what this team's done in Jacksonville, the way they played the Ravens on the road, the way they played the Texans at home, a game that they very easily, if they can finish drives instead of kicking field goals, win. And, you know, and then we saw what happened this past weekend. This team's not that far from, especially in the division that they're in, and as average, which I said from the beginning of the year, as the Colts are, from really competing for a division title, I don't think.
I don't think so either. I think they should be, you know, in the mix next year, and then the following year. Like I sent out a tweet the other night after the game. I think this is going to be a very, very, very good football team in 2016. I mean, and I'm talking about pushing for Super Bowl good in 2016. That's how good I think this team can be, and how they're doing it the right way by building with young, talented players supplemented by a few veterans here.
Plenty coming up on Jaguars Monday. We'll open the phone lines a little bit later, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. Get to your calls. Now back to this game on Thursday night. Bortles, you look at the numbers, and, I mean, the numbers are one thing, but you look at the game itself and the way – you know, Blake Bortles came up through that week with the foot injury and practiced through it and went through the pregame warm-up, and they pretty much – he said, hey, I'm going to play. I'm playing from Monday. I'm playing Tuesday, Wednesday, and then finally on Thursday. They weren't going to take him off that field. And the way he played and had to run on that bad foot and led the team down for a couple of touchdown drives, that says a lot. I mean, and I think a lot of folks around here, Pete, knew that about Blake, but they hadn't really seen that a lot of times on the field.
Yeah, and I was told Thursday night that he might not play much of the game at all. They thought he would play and start, and I'm sure Tony heard the same thing, and maybe we'd get pulled out of that game because of the injury. And here he was, right there in the fourth quarter, right until the very end. And if anybody doubts the toughness of Blake Bortles ever again in his career, not just for what he did there, but I think he's one of those tough guy quarterbacks. You love to have that guy. You know, Philip Rivers showed what he could do as a tough guy quarterback against San Francisco, and I think the Jaguars should be lucky to have a tough guy quarterback to play for.
Well, yeah, and listen, it wasn't all pretty. It was ugly at the beginning. But what I love about Blake is the competitive nature. And you see, we've seen that. Listen, he needs to get better in so many areas, which he will. We can talk about some of those in a bit. But just the fact that he hangs in there, keeps on fighting, we've seen it all year, playing on an injured foot, doing whatever it takes to win a ball game, and made some big throws down the stretch when he had to. I mean, I thought that was very encouraging. We talked about going into the game about hoping that we'd be encouraged offensively coming out of this game. And I think, you know, while the numbers weren't great when they had to and when they needed to at the end of the first half, to start that second half, to get some things going and to take control of that ball game, I thought was very impressive.
I agree with you. I you know, look, he wasn't always pretty, like you said, and there are a lot of things to work on, but there's also been a lot of things where you could see he's growing as a quarterback in terms of how he handles himself, how he conducts himself. It's clear, Tony, midway through the season, it wasn't clear that it was his team and his offense. Now, when you watch him, it's clear it's his team and his offense and how he conducts himself in the huddle, and that's a great thing for a young rookie quarterback.
Well, listen, I think in the next steps are just getting more comfortable. Listen, he needs work on his mechanics, which will help his
– Like what mechanics?
Well, his lower body. His footwork, his lower body are not very good. And I'm not an expert as far as quarterback mechanics, but even if I can recognize it and you watch him how his footwork – And if you ask any quarterback or quarterback coach or anyone who knows the position, that is what determines of how you use your lower body, your footwork, using your lower body to throw the ball. He's a lot of arm throws right now. And that gets you more accurate as you perfect those. And he will. He's gotten so much better from training camp, and I think he's the type of guy who will work, and he's a real pro of making sure that gets better. That coupled with the comfort of not only knowing what his guys are doing, but understanding what defenses are trying to do to him. Because at times, as you watch the All-22 tape, there are plays where there's time, and if he just gives it another second, there's guys coming open late or the backside. And he'll get there. I mean, that's not a lot of guys. Only the good ones do that, and then the great ones perfect it. And so you start seeing a little bit of that here and there, and those are the steps that I look forward to watching him take because I believe he will.
I agree with you 100%. I think, you talk about one of the things we noticed early in the season was how good the velocity was on his football when he played in games compared to when he was in practice. And I think some of that was because he was just playing loose and free, and the velocity kind of waned a little bit because his mechanics went bad. And once his mechanics get back to being what they should be, and he'll have an all-off season to work on that. And when you're working on mechanics and then you're compounded by the fact that people are game planning for you for the first time, Tony. That's an awful lot for a rookie quarterback to have to think about when he takes a snap from under center.
Well, I'm convinced, Pete, the reason they did not want to play him this year had nothing to do with his ability mentally to handle it, or even physically, or the smarts, or the toughness, or the competitiveness. I am convinced, and no one has come out and just said this, but through a lot of conversations and kind of reading tea leaves, it was all about the mechanics. They wanted him to have a year to get better mechanically. And I think they start – because you're right, Pete. Once he became the starter, there's not time to work on that stuff because you're getting ready for a game and you're getting ready for the mental aspect of it. You're getting ready for the strategy and, what you're going to try to do and what you're going to see. And so as far as taking practice time to work on mechanics, that starts to take a secondary position. And I think it's why you've seen a little bit of inconsistency in that area and ebbs and flows as far as how his mechanics been going. And I think that's the main reason they wanted to redshirt him. But he just proved to be, that he gave this team the best chance of winning.
And now he can take with him into next year everything he's learned and then some. I mean, that's the greatness about playing as a young player. You learn there are games. You've won games. You've walked off the field where you won the game and you helped win the game, and the Giants game being one of them. And there are games where you walked off the field and you learned how to lose and be the guy responsible for the loss. So to me, that's all part of the process, and that's why I always was a big believer that no matter what happened, he should have been on the field. And now you go back and you fix his mechanics. You spend the offseason. You can show – now you can pull out tapes of him playing and actually show it to him rather than pull out tapes of him playing in practice. So to me, it was all worth it.
We'll come back in a moment on Jaguars Monday. More with Pete Prisco. Jeff Lagerman will join us as well from Jaguars All Access. New system, new routes, new way. The JTA has transformed to be the kind of bus system customers enjoy riding. Their new routes mark the beginning of a new way of doing business at the JTA. For more information, visit jtafla.com or call 904-630-3100. More Jaguars Monday after this on Jaguars Radio. Jaguars Monday rolls along. Joe Cocker, dead today at the age of 70, by the way, passed away. Battle with cancer. J.P. Shadrick with Tony Boselli. Pete Prisco's over the phone line tonight from Fort Lauderdale. And Jeff Lagerman is with us now. Jaguars All Access tonight. What's up, Jeffrey? Let's get
you might want to turn his mic
get
on.
Your mic on, Jeffrey. Here we go. Are we on now?
We're on now.
Good job, Joe. All right. Well, what's happening? Oh, we're talking quarterback. Full first segment, talking Blake Bortles. And funny enough,
we'll be talking quarterback tonight.
That's the rumor.
Yeah. Got Blake Bortles on. Looking forward to talking to him, you know, because it's going to be interesting to hear his perspective on his rookie season because, I mean, Tony, I know you probably remember your rookie season, but the rookie year is tough. It's long.
It's long.
It's stressful. It's physically demanding.
It's long.
And you think you expect it and you're prepared for it, but in the end, you're not.
Well, the reality is what makes the rookie – what I don't think anyone thinks about is your rookie season actually starts immediately after your bowl game because you start preparing for the combine, and then you go to the combine, and if you're a top pick, then you start working out for all the teams, and then you have the draft, and then you go to mini camp, and then the whirlwind of that – and then you get a few weeks off before training camp, but really, as a rookie, you're trying to, especially quarterback, figure all that out, and then you come to training camp and play a whole season. So it's – I'll never forget, we played the Cleveland Browns here. It was December 24th, day before Christmas, and we were 3-12, and they were 3-12, and it was – it was a nice afternoon day, and we won the game. It was great. Happy we won. I walked in that locker room and showered, and I've never felt such a relief, like a burden, like I could breathe. And I went home, and I was like, I don't want to come back and be around here for several weeks. And I went to Colorado, to California, went to the Super Bowl. I mean, made the rounds for a good month before I came back here and started working out.
Yeah, the mental break you need.
Oh, yeah, I can't even explain how good it felt.
You know, it's even more demanding for what the rookies go through now. I mean, think about what Blake has gone through. I mean, you know, UCF bowl game, and then you have the NFL Combine, and it's so much more involved nowadays as far as with the prospects because, I mean, the Combine has become a production in and of itself, so you have media commitments. And then with the draft being moved back later on, you have all these individualized workouts with teams, your pro day, and then you're traveling around all these different teams. I don't know about you, Tony. I didn't travel around and visit teams.
I went to –
how many?
I went to – came here, went to the Rams, who are in my own backyard – and then a couple teams. So I guess only two teams.
Yeah, you went to a couple teams, whereas I'm sure Blake probably went to –
but, Jeff, this is what Blake didn't have to do.
12, 15?
You know what Blake didn't have to do? 6 weeks of two-a-days in Stevens Point.
No, he didn't have to do that.
Hey, Tony, neither did Jeff, because Jeff didn't have to either. He didn't show up the first 4 days.
Okay, well, Jeff did 5.5 weeks.
That's because I was the only smart one, Pete.
Yes, you were. Well, you and a couple others.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, that's a lot to ask of a young quarterback, and not only that, to be, you know, be the face of the franchise, and, you know, to try to, you know, totally digest an offense and understand it, and then to be surrounded by young talent. I mean, it's an unbelievable baptism just to play in the National Football League level, but then when you take into account what the demands of the quarterback position are. I mean, it's so much more than the other position.
Hey, Pete, has that changed over the years from your view from the outside, the quarterback evolution in the offseason and all that?
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, it's just changed entirely. I mean, it's a year-round process now. And it's not just for a rookie quarterback, but everybody. I mean, coaches, everybody. And like Tony said, I mean, Jeff said, you know, the combine process is in February, but from the time their season ends until the time they get to the combine, they're banging training as hard as they possibly can for that, so there's no time off. Then you get to the combine. Then you go to all the pro days, and you get to all, you know, the OTA days and the workouts and everything. So it's, from the time he's done his college season, he has no time off. There might have been, two weeks between the end of the OTAs and training camp. I think that's it for them.
Yeah, I would strongly recommend that Blake book a ticket somewhere where it's warm and it has water, and just go for 2 weeks and get away. I mean, seriously, just to mentally recharge your batteries, to get away from it all. You know, take a trip, man. Take a buddy or, you know, whatever, and just get away.
Pete, that's what you do every year, right?
I do it, like, in the summer because that's when it stops for us. But if I were Blake, I'd get away, go on the beach, and work on your footwork on the beach.
Will that help on the beach? Or does it
I don't know, but getting away sounds good, doesn't it? I'm daydreaming over here thinking about getting away myself.
You got your season ends next week. What are you talking about? You can get all the way you want, Tony.
No, no, I got the playoffs, Pete.
Oh, you do? Okay,
got three games in the playoffs, so it continues. Plus, it never ends here on Jaguar Radio. We got the Thursday night show year-round.
That's right. That's right.
We grind away. We're not like you, Pete. Take time off.
Yeah, okay. Tell me about it.
Well, you're the one that's not here tonight, Pete. I mean, I mean.
Yeah, and I
hey, where like are you at, Prisco? Yeah.
I'm in Fort Lauderdale, and it sounds like I'm taking tonight off, too, doesn't it? It sounds like I'm not here. You know, it's you know, I'm not here, and even if I wasn't there, I'd still win the face-off with Tony later on.
Whatever.
Wow. Mm. We'll get to that coming up.
Strong words.
What you got on the film room tonight, Luggy?
We're actually going to look at a couple examples of how Blake got better in the course of the game. He had two exceptional reads in the game. The first four offensive series of the game were painful. I mean, he didn't perform very well, but then, you know, he got better throughout the course of the game. Made some key plays, especially on the scoring drive there at the end half, I mean, with his feet. But then also the one read that he made where he threw it to Marquise Lee, which, you know, we've been kind of watching on film for a couple weeks now. We've been sitting there saying, you know, don't do number 11. You know, when you've got an opportunity in man coverage, and he finally did it. You know, and I thought that was a – I don't want to say it was a monumental moment, but it's maybe something that you look back on and you say, okay, this was part of the growth process, and the rookie finally realized that when you've got man coverage, find your best guy and throw it to him. You know, whether he looks covered, open, doesn't matter. Give him a chance, and he did that.
Yeah, Lee's come along. I mean, that's another topic we haven't got to.
Yeah, we can talk about that. He's the most explosive player on the field for the Jaguars right now. And he's the one guy who can win. He can run.
And there's not a lot of them right now.
No, but he can win over the top. He can beat man. He's getting better at getting off the press. He's mentally getting better. And I look forward to the time when Blake starts to really trust him and what he can do and his ability, like Jeff said, to take some shots and put it in there. And he started doing that a little bit later. I think he missed some opportunities early, but, you know, Blake struggled early, as Jeff said. But that's what I love about him. He, you know, how often do you see a guy struggle early and never figure it out? And kind
of
go into the shell a little bit. And Blake doesn't do that.
Hey Pete, did you happen to have a chance to watch this yesterday game? It was a sit down interview on Fox pregame that Terry Bradshaw did with Matthew Stafford.
I did not see it. Why?
It's just a great interview, and listening to Matt Stafford talk about, you know, because Terry was asking him, because, you know, Matt Stafford has been a turnover machine for the Detroit Lions. You know, he throws for a lot of yards, obviously, and has had great success with Calvin Johnson. And then Terry was asking him what's different this year, because the Lions are winning and Stafford has not thrown for nearly as many yards, but he's cut down the turnovers. You know, Stafford said, look, he said, it takes a long time to learn to play the position. Well, here's a guy in his sixth year. You know, we're talking about a guy who's, what, 12 games in? You know,
that's,
I mean,
true. But, you know, the other thing, too, though, Jeff, is he finally has a defense, too. And I say this all the time, and I actually pulled up all these stats last week because I did something on Cutler when he got benched. Jay Cutler, think about this for a second, has thrown 213 passes this season when his team is trailing by 9 or more points. To put that in perspective, Russell Wilson has thrown 39 with his team trailing by 9 or more points. And Stafford has often been in that position. And that's why I think the Jaguars are building that team the way they are building it. They're going to build it, get really good on defense, and then they're not going to put all that pressure on the quarterback to go out there where he's whipping it around, chucking it around, trailing by 9, 10, 12 points. And they will make mistakes. So I think that's smart from their standpoint. But if you don't have a defense, you're going to make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, no doubt. But I look forward to the day when you get a little bit of experience around number 5 and you get some seasoning with the young guys that are growing with them. And I would venture to say that 3 probably free agents, veteran free agents on the offensive side of the ball in the offseason.
3? Wow.
Yeah.
What positions?
I think tight end, wide receiver, and offensive lineman.
I'm with you. Yeah. I think,
and maybe
think
even a running back.
But the tight end position is a problem because the position isn't good in the National Football League. It's a major problem. I mean, every single week you look at it and you go, okay, Gronkowski's good. Jimmy Graham hasn't been playing that well. But, you know, Julius Thomas is good. And he's actually a free agent. But you look around the league and you go, Where are the good tight ends? They're hard to find.
Yeah, but Pete, is Julius Thomas good because of Peyton Manning, or is he good because of Julius Thomas? He's not the most physical guy. He's not a great blocker.
No, he's not. And that's the other dynamic of it. Are you getting a hybrid receiving tight end who can't play in line and block, or are you going to go try and get an all-around tight end? And the problem is, who's the all-around tight end in the National Football League? It's Gronkowski.
Jason Witten. Well, Gronkowski and Jason Witten.
Yeah, Kelsey's up in the years.
And Kelsey's pretty good at Kansas City.
Yeah, he's going to be good. Yeah, you're right. He's a young guy. You can try and find a guy like that. That's what you need. But I agree with you. An offensive lineman, a tight end, and a receiver. And, you know, maybe I'll, you know, how about this? If they came away with Randall Cobb, a veteran offensive lineman, and Julius Thomas, people in Jacksonville would do cartwheels, wouldn't they?
I would. Real quick question. We've got to go to break here in a second, but I want to ask this question. Actually, in a response to something that I saw Phil Simms said in a graph he put up during the game on Thursday night, and get Jeff's comments, and then Pete, you and I can talk about it more throughout the show. He listed Blake Bortles as the third best rookie quarterback behind Derek Carr, number one, and Teddy Bridgewater, number two. Thoughts?
For me, I mean, he also had Mettenberger above Blake Bortles.
Oh, I thought he had him. I thought he had him fourth behind Bortles.
Yeah, no, he was from my conversation with him. He was.
Oh, conversations, for, yes. But I'm saying on the graph.
What he actually put on the graphic?
Yeah, on the graphic on TV, I believe he had him third. In conversations, yeah, he liked Mettenberger better than all those guys.
Yeah, but it's just so hard to compare apples to apples in that scenario. I mean, if you look at Derek Carr and you look at Teddy Bridgewater, how young are they around those two guys? They're not nearly as young as what they are around Blake Bortles. You know, so it's kind of hard to do that comparison. I haven't watched. I mean, have you seen the Raiders yet this year?
Just highlights.
Highlights. I haven't seen anything but highlights on them. Same thing with the Minnesota Vikings. I haven't seen film on them. You know, that's something that in the offseason that I'm sure I'll be taking a look at. But, you know, I don't know. But I just know that they don't have what Blake Bortles has around him.
Pete, we'll get your thoughts. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead,
and I'll
Pete.
Say this. In the last month, I would say that Carr's had moments where he's looked fantastic, and he's had moments where he's looked like crap. You know, same with Bridgewater. And Bridgewater's gotten better in the last month, but he's got better people around him. Neither of those offenses actually is stacked in terms of veterans. So there are some young players around those guys, but nothing like Blake has. I think those guys might be ahead of him right now, but a year from now, no. Blake Bortles will be ahead of both of them.
Pete Prisco, we'll get back with you in just a moment. Jeff, you got – this is your last show tonight? Or you have another one?
No, we got another one.
There's one more after next week, too.
I think so.
Next Monday.
I think so.
You better find
sure.
out.
I haven't looked that far ahead yet, JP.
Let's get to this one first.
One day at a time.
Okay.
On,
pretty sure we do, though.
Tonight, at least 30 minutes from now, you have one.
Yes.
And then maybe a week and 30 minutes from now, you might have another.
I'm almost positive tonight, and then we have one next week, and then that wraps it up. But we do have Gus Bradley's show still to come. We've got one this weekend, which we usually have, and then we have another one the following weekend. So we will have a postseason Gus Bradley television show as well.
I like that.
And then multiple Gus Bradley radio shows going all the way until January 15th.
Oh, a couple weeks.
The 8th, and then the 15th.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Tonight at 7, Jaguars All Access, Sam Kavaris, Jeff Lagerman, and Blake Bortles on Channel 4. Phone lines are open. 355-6351, 355-NFL1. More Jaguars Monday after this on Jaguars Radio. Jaguars Monday rolls along. JP Shadrick with Tony Boselli. And Pete Prisco over the phone line tonight. Phone lines open, 355-NFL1, 355-6351. We'll get to your calls coming up. Hey, Pete, let's go back to what we were talking about right before the break about the rookie quarterback comparisons. I mean, how much do you buy into that, or can you at this time?
Well, I think it's hard, and I think Jeff made the point of being that this team is so young in Jacksonville, it's maybe historically young on the offensive side of the ball, that it's so hard to compare them to the other guys. And I agree with that. I mean, it's not like Minnesota and Oakland are loaded with, you know, veterans on their offenses, but they are you know, much more veteran-oriented than the Jacksonville offense is. I mean, you look at the Oakland offense. Yeah, the left tackle's a veteran. The left guard's a rookie. The center's a, you know, three-year guy. The right guard's a veteran. They signed as a free agent. The right tackle's a veteran. You know, they have veteran receivers, James Jones, and, you know, Andre Holmes is a second-year player. And, you know, the Marcel Reese is a veteran. So there's more veterans on the offense than there are in Jacksonville. And that's the thing we keep hearing time and again in Jacksonville, is that on every single play, one rookie makes a mistake, at least one. And when that happens, you're going to have the inconsistency, and it's all going to fall back on the quarterback, including him, by the way. So I think it really is a tough comparison in terms of apples to apples when you break down all the rookie quarterbacks.
Listen, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's fun for TV. It's fun for us to do the rank them after their rookie year. But my goodness, if you made decisions about, you know, players based on 1 year, based on such a small sample size, I think you'd miss it a number of times. We would have put RG3 in the Hall of Fame. Colin Kaepernick would have a bust right next to him. And, heck, Troy Aikman was thought to be a possible bust. I mean, to the point where Jimmy Johnson drafted another quarterback in the first round the next year. And so I just think it's way too early to make any assumptions on anything. I think you can know if a guy can't do it. You can have a pretty good sense if a guy can't do it. But to say whether a guy can for sure do it or not after 1 year is risky business.
Yeah, and you know, I go back to when you were with the Texans. I mean, David Carr had a lot of problems and a bad offensive line. And I bet you some guys knew right away that he wasn't going to be able to do it. I'll bet you. I'll bet you there were guys, and you won't say it, but I'll bet you there were guys in that building who knew right away that he was never going to be able to make it happen. And again, I don't know if you'll say this, but I was told that David Carr was one of those guys that went home early and didn't stay late. And to me, that's all part of the process. You have to be a grind. If you're going to succeed in the National Football League as a quarterback, you better be a grinder and stay around and watch tons of tape and work on your craft and everything else and pick the brains of everybody you could possibly can. And I don't think David Carr was a grinder, which is why ultimately he didn't succeed.
I'm sure he would do things different if he could do it over again.
That's all you got to say about
that's
that?
That's Tony's nice way of saying what I just said was correct.
Well, Tony, it's all you got.
Well, I like David. He's a great guy, good kid, extremely talented athletically, big arm. I think he would have probably could have done things a little bit different. I'm sure his brother has learned from it.
Didn't they coach? Didn't he coach? Didn't he coach his brother during the process? Kind of right.
I have no idea.
From what I understand, the father coached David when he was at Houston more than the team did.
There was a lot. I'll just say this: there was a lot of family. Yeah. There was a lot of family members on the sidelines.
That's unbelievable. JP Shadrick, Tony Vaselli, Pete Frisco's on the phone line with us tonight on Jaguars Monday. You know, we haven't really got to the offensive line yet, guys. Tonight we've talked quarterback and a little wide receiver, but last time out, four sacks allowed. That's improvement, right, Tony? Or is it? I mean, is that
four sacks accurate? Is too many. It's too many. A couple were on. One was on a mental error by Sam Young. He went the wrong way and gave a free hit on the quarterback. It was not good. And I think a couple twist games. I think one was a quick game and the ball needed to be gone, but there was nowhere to throw it, so Blake did the right thing, just eating it. So those things happen, but they got to get better. I think they're improving. I'll still stand by the fact I think it's a group that's going to be good. I would add a veteran like Jeff talked about, but I think it's going to be a good group.
What position would you add the veteran?
I wouldn't be worried about his position as much. I want to add a tough, smart, nasty offensive lineman. That's more important to me than even talent level. Tough,
but,
smart.
But Tony, I mean, high-priced, tough, nasty offensive lineman or a swing, nasty, tough offensive line?
How much is Iapati going to cost in the offseason?
A lot.
Like what?
I mean, you got to look at Beatles' contract and go over, above and above that.
Six or seven?
Yeah. Is he worth that?
It's pretty big, pretty tough, pretty nasty.
There's a lot of money around here, too, right?
Yeah, he's pretty big, pretty tough, pretty nasty. But he's not great in pass protection, Tony.
He's a big man. He covers up a lot of space.
And he's also been a left guard in his career. I don't know if that would matter. I mean, he's been mostly a left guard.
Does that matter? I don't know. Maybe go find a big right tackle. I'm just saying you need a veteran. I'll say it this way, and without getting position specific on any offensive position, they need to get older on offense and younger on defense.
I agree.
I would go free agency on offense, and I'd go draft on defense. And pick the positions. I don't care. I really don't. Outside of quarterback, you're not going to get a veteran quarterback. Get a veteran at any other position and multiple on offense, and then get younger.
Okay, here's a question for you. And you being like, the offensive line.
I think the defensive tackle at USC would look good in a Jaguar uniform, by the way, too.
Yes, he would. Yes, he would. And he might. But here's a question for you, Tony.
Okay.
Any thought to moving Jokel back to right tackle and getting a left tackle?
I wouldn't.
Okay, why?
I think Luke will be a better left tackle. He's more athletic. I think he'll put on a little size and not lose his athletic ability as well. And I think you want a big, nasty, you know, just punch you in the mouth right tackle in today's football. That's what I would do.
I agree with you. I would keep him. And people have asked me that question. That's why I ask you that question. I think I would keep him at left tackle. I would get him, you know, working with you, by the way. I would get him working with you. And
my hourly rate's pretty high.
Yeah, we talked about this camp you were going to start, Tony. You didn't start
it. Very high.
Yeah, well, you know what? You are Mr. Jaguar, so don't you help the kid out a little bit, huh? You selfish guy, yeah?
Yeah. It's Christmas.
There'd be a hometown discount for anyone on the Jaguars. Like, for,
okay.
Probably free.
All right. And then
I would discount it 100%.
Okay. And then the right tackle position.
On any other teams, it's very expensive. It's about $10,000 an hour.
We're putting that thing together for you. And you know what? If you ever get in the Hall of Fame, the price will go even up higher.
Yeah, I bet.
that's your job, not mine, Pete.
Well, I know. Well, if that happens and your price goes up higher, I'll take a cut.
All right. You got it.
But seriously, I think they do need to get a nasty right tackle. You know, that's the one thing. When you guys were good back in the day, Tony, you had the prototypical left tackle, and you had Leon. It wasn't a big, nasty, big guy, but he was nasty and violent at right tackle. That's what you need.
He wasn't small either. He was about 6'3", 320.
Yeah, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't 6'6", 330. You know what I mean? He was just, Leon was like a square. He was like a fire hydrant.
Yeah, but he played about 380.
Right. Yeah, well, sometimes they might have got up to 360.
He was a powerful human being. Let's put it that way.
He sure was. And that's what they need at right tackle. Remember when the Bills were good? They had House Ballard at right tackle. Remember?
Yep.
Good, big, physical, nasty player. That's the kind of tackle you need on the right side. The problem is those guys are hard to find. They really are.
I think everyone's looking for one, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, the right tackle position in the National Football League is bad. I mean, we sit here on a weekly basis, Tony, and critique the left tackle spot. But if we go back and look at the right tackle position, you got to look long and hard to find a guy you can sit there and say, you know what, that guy's a good right tackle for what he's asked to do. And
Who's the best right tackle right now in football?
I think the Ravens found a really good one in the right tackle, Ricky Wagner.
Yeah, he's
had
a good
year. He's had a really good year for them. Went down yesterday in that game, missed time, and I think that, you know, they feasted on. I can't wait to watch the tape and see how he did when he was matched up against Watt. I saw Watt beat him a couple times early in the game, but I think that's the kind of guy you need. You know, they drafted him, I think it was in the third or fourth round, and he stepped in at weight of the year and then stepped in and played, and he's a good right tackle. But, I mean, you look at these guys, Pfluger, he's a right tackle. He has that. He's supposed to be a mean, nasty guy. His play hasn't been that great this year.
I thought he played better last year as a rookie.
I did, too. And then you look around the league. I mean, you know, the right tackle in San Francisco didn't play a lot this year because he's been hurt, but how about Bulaga? Bulaga's a pretty good right tackle.
That'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah.
Pete, we'll come back in a moment. And you mentioned J.J. Watt. We'll talk about that second time around for the Jags this year to face him coming up on Sunday. Go long in the fuel-efficient Ford Escape. See your Southern Ford dealer today, proud partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Ford, go further. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL-1. 355-6351. We'll get to your calls coming up and more Jaguars Monday after this on Jaguars Radio.
See you now,
Jaguars Monday rolls along. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Pete Prisco. Phone calls coming up, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Peter, you ready to go to the phone lines tonight?
Hold on.
Absolutely.
Before.
Whoa.
Good tunes right there. Great
Tony's
tunes.
Tony's going to berate them all. He's going to berate them all.
Hold on. Listen to this a little more. Let's play out a little bit. There we go. That's what I wanted to hear right there.
Pete Prisco's feeling all right. That's right. Let's go to the phone lines. How about that?
Let's do it.
John on the south side has been waiting for a little while tonight to talk about the quarterback. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. So I got a hypothetical question for you guys. Let's say coming to this draft, the only quarterbacks available to us is Blake Bortles or Russell Wilson. Who do you guys choose for the future of our franchise between the two if they were available this draft?
All right. Thanks for the call. Pete, I know what your answer
Pete's
would be.
Go.
Well, I'll say this. Russell Wilson was fantastic last night. I'll give him that. But I still think when your quarterback's rushing for almost 1,000 yards, something's wrong. It can't stay that way. And I think Tony made a point when, you know, Johnny Manziel, that didn't last long when he got hurt. I know Russell Wilson avoids contact, but I still don't want my quarterback running that much. So to answer your question, right now I'd probably take Russell Wilson in this draft. If he were in the draft right now, in 2 or 3 years, I'd probably flip that.
Boy, listen, I love Blake, and I think Blake's going to be a great quarterback. But, I mean, I've not been the biggest Russell Wilson fan, but, gosh, give the guy his due. I mean, the guy has been outstanding this year. They're going to have the number one seed for back-to-back years, and I think probably end up in the Super Bowl as well because I don't see anyone going to Seattle and beating them. And
Dallas did.
Yeah, they did, but not in the playoffs. It's going to be completely different. You know that, Pete. And the way he's playing right now, the team's playing much better defensively than they were back when Dallas got him because they're healthy. They're flying around on defense. And Russell Wilson had 440 yards of total offense or whatever he had last night. And the guy doesn't get hit. I don't understand. He does not get hit when he gets outside the pocket. He gets down. He's really good. He is really dang good. So I mean, I'm happy we have Blake, but I'm not gonna sit here and act like Russell Wilson does not deserve his due right now as one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL the way he's playing.
He's playing well. I still wouldn't. He's not my preference at quarterback. I would take him over Luck. I know that much, and I probably wouldn't take him over Romo. Romo is playing out of his mind, by the way. I when you look at Romo, has 32 touchdown passes, and he missed the game. He's playing unreal football. And nobody ever gives the guy his due, but yeah, I have to say this. I mean, because I've been a critic of Russell Wilson's. I don't like his style of play, but last night he was fantastic.
And if you look at, you know what I like about Russell Wilson. And I know Pete hates this, but it proves that you don't have to play football one way in the NFL. And I know Pete would
eventually
argue.
You do.
No, you don't. And you look, and I'll go back and look at the Super Bowl winners over the last 5, 6 years and who the quarterbacks are and how they all play different. And there's more than one way to do it. And I actually think it's a little bit the way that Seattle has done it, that Gus and Dave are doing here. Building a defense that's going to be very good and young and fast and aggressive. And that was a fun game to watch. It was fun watching him last night play football.
But, and you'll admit this at one point, you'll even admit this, they weren't doing much for a quarter and a half until he ripped off the 55-yard run, which I consider an accident. Those aren't plays you can't count on those plays on a week-in and week-out basis.
It's an accident. Pete, I'd agree with you, but the guy has 1,000 yards rushing just about. So maybe the accident just happens with him. I mean, he finds a way to get it done, and it's not like they're very talented outside at receiver.
Tony, but I'll tell you this. There's only two quarterbacks in the last 30 years that have thrown for 300 yards in games and rushed for 100, and you know who they are. I mean, Michael Vick was the other one. And so I think that's the stat, but there's a stat along those lines with him and Michael Vick. And you know what? We were saying this when Michael Vick went to Green Bay and won a playoff game. We were all sitting here saying the exact same thing about it. He was going to revolutionize the position. He was going to change the way you play the game. Look how much sustainable success he'll have. Now, granted, he doesn't work at the game the way Russell Wilson works at the game, or at least the way we hear Russell Wilson works at the game. So he does have that advantage. But I don't care. Eventually, you've got to get back to playing that game in the pocket. And, you know, look, he will because he works at it. But for now, I understand why he scrambles around. I just don't think it's sustainable to play that way for the long term. But and the other thing, it's also pretty easy to play quarterback when your team's given up 6.8 points a game in the last five.
Yeah, but it goes back to my a question I have, Pete. Who's going to beat Seattle? I mean, who's going to go into Seattle in the playoffs and win? They're the best defense. They are the best defense by far right now. And Green Bay does not play well on the road. They couldn't beat the Buffalo Bills on the road.
Right, I know, but that's different.
And they didn't play great. And they didn't play great for three quarters against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as well.
Yeah, well, Rodgers was sick and hurt. I mean, but I'll say this: so you can also say Seattle lost that Kansas City to a bad Chiefs, not an average Chiefs team, and they got run on. I was talking to somebody last night who agree with this, being as you're the old offensive lineman. They say the way to beat that Seattle team is to smack them in the mouth and run right at them. Run right at them because they're fast and they're athletic. But if you run right at them like Dallas did in that game and just pound on them and pound on them and pound on them because they're not a big defense, that's the way to attack them.
Well, that's how I'd attack them because they want to rush the passer and cover people. I'd pound it right at them until I'd make them stop me. I agree with that, Pete.
Okay, as good as they are on defense, they don't have great pass rushers. They have good pass rushers, but there's no great ones. But have you ever played a defense that likes to play the way they do in your career, played that way, and when you went at them and smashed them in the mouth, you could sense that that's something they didn't want to get involved in?
Well, I don't think any team likes when you punch them in the mouth defensively. I think that's what you have to do against great defenses because if you let them get going, it is over.
I mean, like the Titans, when you used to play the Titans, Tony, they weren't a power defense. The good Titans teams, you know, because Kurse could fly up the field and they weren't huge on the inside. You know, they didn't have huge players on the inside. If you beat them, when you guys did beat them, was that because you hit them and pound them and hit them in the mouth? And the other side, flip side was, if you didn't hit them in the mouth, they kind of got going and got after you a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's a great example, Pete. Go back and look at when this team was good, when we had success, what did we do well? We ran the ball.
Right.
I mean, everyone talks about Jimmy and Keenan, and rightfully so, and Mark was a very good quarterback. But when we were at our best, we were the number two rushing team in the league, and we ran at people.
Right.
It helped having Fred Taylor.
Right, and so that's why I think, you know, Green Bay has Lacy, and they can do it. And Dallas has, you know, Murray, and they can do it. But that's about it. I mean, because Arizona, with the quarterback situation being what it is, They can't do it. Atlanta can't do it because they don't run the football, so they couldn't do it. Carolina runs the football, but they're limited passing the football, so they can't do it. Detroit, I think they're too limited offensively to do it, so you're probably right. The only two teams that probably can go into Seattle and win are Dallas and Green Bay.
And before we go to a break right now, but one last thing about Seattle. How about Marshawn Lynch? Is that guy unbelievable or what? I mean, he's ridiculous.
I think that was a sensational run, and he's also an idiot for not talking after the game, being an idiot.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you, but I love watching that guy run the ball. He is the hardest back to bring down in the NFL.
We will.
He's a physical power back, no question about it. And you know what? When does it start wearing him down? That's what I want to know because he's got a ton of carries on that body.
This season, 266 carries, 1,200 yards plus for Marshawn Lynch. Wilson, by the way, 842 yards on the ground this year.
Yeah, I don't think Marshawn Lynch cares.
Seahawks. No.
It's all about the Skittles.
We'll come back in a moment. More of your calls, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Eric, Mike, hang in there. We'll get to you coming up. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Unchained.
Jaguars Monday continues. Second hour, J.P. Shadrick with Tony Boselli in Jacksonville. Pete Prisco over the phone lines tonight down in South Florida in Fort Lauderdale. Where you had duties with your CBS sports brethren, I guess, this weekend. Pete?
Yes, we have a short week with Christmas and everything, so Pete, we have to do all these game previews and so with Pat Kerwin and myself. And so today I just stayed in and did them in the studio all afternoon, so that's what I did.
There you go. Glad you're with us tonight. I'm glad you didn't want to travel during the show. That's awesome. And we only got a couple left.
Yeah, I didn't want to miss the show, and I didn't want to. From what I understand, I guess the weather's pretty crappy up there today too, right?
So, yeah, you might have been delayed anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, probably would have got stuck.
In that propeller plane, you don't want to be stuck up there in one of those. That's for sure. Let's go back to the phone lines. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Eric on the south side has been hanging on for a bit, wants to talk about the upcoming off season. What's up, Eric?
Hey, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Great.
Hey, before I get into my point, Tony, I'd like to say great job on the show on Friday night. Watching that video of Keenan and Jimmy just, you know, gives you the chills, man. It makes you wonder where we could be. So I want to give you a shout out to that.
Thank you.
Wait. I was on that show too. You don't give me a shout out?
No, he didn't. So move on. Keep going.
Biggest caller ever, by the way.
I mean, the only person that matters on that show was Tony. So.
Thank you very much.
Wow.
Anyways, all right, so I'm going to be that guy and I'm going to put you on the spot, okay?
Right.
I want to know if the draft were today and you could take anyone on the board you want, anyone.
Okay.
Who would it be and why?
All right. Thanks for the call.
Anybody? I would take Leonard Williams because I think he's young. I think he's a very good college player. I think he has the ability to be as disruptive as anybody at the pro level. His size at 6'5", 300 pounds, and he's a young body that's only going to get bigger and stronger. And there's just not that many big guys who can move the way he can.
And you're looking forward, Pete. Tony, whatever your name
is. And you know what? I would agree with him. 100%. I would take Leonard Williams. That would be the guy. And as much as I love edge rushers and their impact, I think this kid has a chance to be another one of the dominant down linemen in the National Football League. I would take Leonard Williams.
And he's athletic enough to play a 3 technique, a 5 technique, even a wide 6.
Anything. He's that good. And, like you said last week, Tony, he's a Florida kid.
Oh, yeah, he's Daytona Beach.
Yep.
I think he'd be a heck of a player. That's who I'd pick if I could pick anybody right now. But now, I haven't watched a ton of college tape yet. I will once the season ends, starts watching all the top draft picks in the class. And I know Pete likes Gregory from Nebraska. I haven't seen one snap of him, and there's a lot of good players.
He hasn't played as well this year. I'll say that first and foremost. I don't think he's played as well this year as he did a year ago, but I still like him. The kid at Clemson's an interesting pass rusher, Beasley. I like him a little bit. But the kid at Missouri who got 2 personal fouls, didn't he get one against your Alabama team in the bowl game, the bad
match? Yes, he did. He got run from the game, yeah.
In the championship game, he got tossed. That tells me he plays with an edge. I don't mind that. So he's another guy. So there are guys out there. And then they could look on the offensive side of the ball. I doubt they will. I'm with you, Tony. I think they spend money on the offensive side of the ball and fix it there. But if there was a guy if you saw a receiver like Cooper staring you in the face, if you thought he was going to be the next big game changer on that side of the football, maybe you get a guy like that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, you got to believe the quarterbacks are going to go 1-2, and then after that, this team's going to be drafted between 3 and 5, probably, depending on how this game goes this weekend.
So don't win this week, then.
No, you got to beat the Texans. It'd be great to beat the Texans.
I knew that would get you.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Mike in Mandarin wants to talk about Cecil Shorts III and Mercedes Lewis. What's up, man?
What's up there, Tony, Pete, JT? What's going on, guys?
How are you tonight?
I'm pretty good. Okay, I got a question for all three of you guys. I guess my regards to Shorts and Mercedes Lewis. Personally, I don't want to see these guys come back next year. I think we need some playmakers. They are not playmakers. I just wanted to get your opinion on those two and think they should be brought back next year. And I think you're going to call here. Go Jags.
Appreciate it. Pete, go ahead.
I would say no and no. I don't think either one of them will be back. And personally, if it was me, I wouldn't bring either one of them back. I like Cecil, but I don't think Cecil has had the kind of year that warrants him coming back. And as far as Mercedes Lewis, absolutely not. And I'll be honest with you. You get the feeling that his drop, hoofs for hands drop in Baltimore a couple weeks ago might have been the end of him in Jacksonville. And to be honest with you, for the money he's making, not a chance in hell I would bring him back.
I think it all depends on the price. I think bringing Mercedes back at the right price asking, you know, him to take a little bit of a haircut on his salary. I don't think there's anything wrong bringing him back, you know, at the right price as an inline tight end who's a very good blocker still, and going and finding that move tight end out there in free agency if you can do it. Like we talked about earlier in the broadcast, that is not an easy position to find right now in the NFL. I mean, you might have to draft a young guy to do that. And then as far as Cecil, same thing. I mean, what's the market going to bear for Cecil Shorts out there? And if you can get him at the right price, why not? But I think a lot of that's going to be determined what that price is going to be and what you do in free agency. I mean, we've all talked about Randall Cobb. And if you get Randall Cobb, then where's the position? Where's the spot for Cecil?
Let me ask you this. Mercedes Lewis, you still think he's as good a blocker as he was 3 or 4 years ago?
Not as good, but I think he's still in the upper echelon of tight ends in this league.
Okay. Here's the other thing about him. This one for me has always been one of the great mysteries of Mercedes Lewis. When he came out of UCLA, and I know you watched him a lot.
He was a pass catcher.
Right. Why has he morphed from pass catcher to blocker? I mean, the question about him coming out of school was whether he would block, because he was what you thought was going to be a move tight end back in the day.
It's a mystery, Pete. I have no idea.
I mean, because we're both Pac-12 guys, so we watch a lot.
Yeah,
of him.
I thought he was going to be the H-back type of receiver, a Julius Thomas type guy.
Right. It's mystifying to me that he's morphed into what he's become, which is a glorified tackle, and for his money, way too much. Yeah. Now, if you can get those guys at decent rates, then of course you bring them back. But I'm at their current rate, at, you know, Shorts is a free agent, but at Mercedes' current rate, no, not a chance in hell I'd bring him back.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Chris is in London, wants to talk about Marquise
London's
Lee.
London's calling.
What's up, Chris?
Hi, guys. How you guys doing?
Outstanding.
Okay, man. What's up?
There was something I noticed during the game, and that was on the Jordan Todman touchdown run. The speed that Marquise Lee had on that play was insane, in my opinion, because when Jordan Todman threw the stiff arm, Marquise Lee was at least 10 yards back, and he was able to outrun pretty much everyone on the team and keep up with Todman to, you know, perhaps throw a block for him if needed be. So, and obviously after the game, we got to see that amazing episode of A Football's Life with Tony and Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hey, what's
and
up?
And I've got a question for you. Not a foot race, but in game speed. You know, Tony and Pete, you guys have seen them play live many, many times. Who is faster on the field, Marquise Lee or Jimmy Smith? And I can take the answer off the air.
Thanks for the call.
I have never seen anyone cover Jimmy Smith 1-on-1 or catch Jimmy Smith. And so until I can say that about Marquise Lee, I'm going to say Jimmy Smith.
I don't think there's any question Jimmy Smith is faster. You know, Jimmy Smith never went across the middle. I mean, he never went across the middle and he caught all those passes. Think about it. Rarely did he go across the middle, if at all. In fact, I remember Tony back in the day charting all the pass plays that you guys threw in deep in the middle of the field, and there weren't a lot of them. And Coughlin actually got miffed at me for that. But Jimmy didn't go outside. Jimmy did all his work outside the numbers.
He was unstoppable. He was an outstanding player. Now, Marquise Lee can fly too, and I think what we're seeing out of Marquise is he continues to play faster and faster, and I think he's going to be a really good receiver in this league.
Let me ask you this, because there's so many quality rookie receivers having big years this year. This is something I said yesterday when we were on our set. I said, by this time next year, Marquise Lee is going to be in the conversation with that group.
Oh, I believe so. If he dedicates himself to the offseason to get in the weight room and then just continue to refine the mental aspect of it for himself, I think he'll be outstanding.
Like, I mean, and I'm talking about being in the Beckham camp. I don't know if he'll be as good as Beckham, but he can be in that conversation.
Well, Beckham's special right now, man. He is doing something.
Wow.
I mean, he's unreal. He's the best. You know,
can that last for him? Well, I mean, people figure him out.
He's fast. He's strong. He's great hands. He's explosive.
Knows how to run routes.
No, he's a. That's where he's ahead of Marquise right now. He's a polished route runner. To think the Buffalo Bills gave up a first rounder next year to trade up for Sammy Watkins when Odell Beckham would have been sitting there for them to take. Amazing.
Yeah. And Watkins is a good player, and he's going to be a really
good
player.
He's not Odell Beckham.
He's not Odell Beckham, and you could have had the pick. You could have kept the pick.
Let's go back to the phone lines one more time. Elliot and San Marco. Hey, Pete, he wants to talk about your boy Toby Gerhart. What's up, Elliot?
Hey, fellas. Merry Christmas. That show really was great, despite the fact that Pete was in it too much.
Wow. Everybody's like the pilot nice. On Pete's right now.
Yeah, that's I kind just, of agree with you.
That's harsh.
It's just easy to do, Pete.
I know. I had to bring some realism to it. Because, see, everybody was...
Yeah, you did that.
Everybody else, I did.
I got a couple of quick questions for you. Do we need to start thinking about Toby Gerhart in terms of his physical reliability? Because that guy gets banged up about every fifth play, it seems like. And for the money, do we need to be worried about that? Because this is really the first season that's been all about... He's been the featured guy the first time in his career, but he's hurt all the time. And is that going to be something we really need to be concerned about? That's number one. And number two, Julius Thomas, I'm fairly certain, is an unrestricted free agent.
Yes.
Is he a guy that we need to go spend the money on and bring into this offense to spend whatever we got to do to get him?
Well, let's talk about Toby first, Pete. Listen, I think availability is very critical at every position, and he has got beat up quite a bit this year. He's starting to run the ball at a much higher level, ran the ball physical and tough on Thursday night, but couldn't finish the game because of a couple injuries, and we'll find out exactly what his status is probably tomorrow when the Jaguars start having to release injury reports. But I think it is a concern anytime a player can't consistently be out on the field.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I thought he ran better the other day, and maybe he was a little healthy to start the game, and then he gets dinged up again. So it is a concern. And to me, he's a backup running back. That's what he is, and they need to find and figure out if Donard Robinson is that guy going forward or if it's somebody else. But to me, Toby Gerhart's a backup running back.
And as far as Julius Thomas, listen, he is a fabulous move tight end, athletic, great in the passing game. My big question is, and just talking to people, and I haven't been able to study the film too much on him, I mean, what kind of blocking, what kind of physicality are you going to get on the line of scrimmage? And then the second, even bigger question I have is he a system guy because of Peyton Manning? Is his success due to his who's playing quarterback, or is he really that good?
Plus, his numbers are down a little bit. I mean,
he's been hurt,
But he was catching tons of touchdown passes, but not catching a ton of passes. And so that to me is a little concerning. But I still think if you can get a guy like that, boy, you have to give it strong consideration, don't you, Tony?
Oh, I do. Yeah, absolutely. I do a lot of homework on him.
We'll come back in a moment. The Copy Facts Face-Off. The standings are tight with two shows remaining, including tonight.
I'm in must-win territory, down two.
Well, it's big. Are you down one? Somebody's down one. We'll get to the results coming up.
Down one.
Republic Services is the undisputed leader in recycling in Northeast Florida. The official waste provider of the Jags, proudly serving the residents and businesses of Northeast Florida for over 30 years. Call Republic Services for all of your waste and recycling solutions, and they will take it from here. The Copy Facts Face-Off after this. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio. Jaguars Monday rolls along. J.P. Shadrick with Tony Boselli in Jacksonville. Pete Prisco on the phone line tonight. Little Joe Cocker again as he passed away earlier today, 70 years of age. Hey, it's time now for the Copy Facts Face-Off. The season standings, Prisco 9, Boselli 7 with two face-offs remaining, including tonight. So, Tony, you have to win out.
I got to win out to pull the tie off and then force a playoff.
Yeah, and it won't be a coin flip. So, what do you think?
In other words, I have no chance this week, so we have some drama for next week.
Who said that? I mean, you could win and just end it right now, Pete.
We'll see. Let's see if it's fair.
Win and it's over. I mean, that's... Jeez. No confidence
at all. You know, you complain more than anyone I know. You have an excuse every week why you're going to lose. I mean, you're unbelievable.
I win every week. What are you talking about? They just gave you about two or three of them, or it would have been over with like in November.
You're unbelievable.
Okay, the question tonight. It's pretty clear, at least, right, that Odell Beckham Jr. is going to win the Offensive Rookie of the Year. Is that fair, guys, both of you, first off?
Yeah. Hold on,
that's not the question.
I would think so.
So the question is, who is the Defensive Rookie of the Year going to be and why?
Who goes first?
Pete, you're up.
To me, I don't think there's any question who should be the Defensive Rookie of the Year, and there's no doubt it's Aaron Donald, the defensive tackle for the St. Louis Rams. Donald has had a phenomenal season playing next to Robert Quinn on a good – it's a good line, but this guy has been everything and anything when it comes to getting up the field, penetrating. He's small, he's athletic, he's tough, he's physical. You know what? When you look at some of the other candidates, and there are candidates, I think C.J. Mosley's a candidate. I think when you look at what he's done, I think Khalil Mack is a candidate. But to me, there's no doubt when you look at what Aaron Donald's done, 8 sacks as a rookie on the interior, that's hard to do. I mean, he's hit the quarterback 26 times. That's hard to do. For me, there's no doubt it's Aaron Donald, the defensive tackle for the St. Louis Rams.
Okay, we got Pete down for Aaron Donald. Tony, who you got?
Well, my goodness, why don't you name every other rookie in the league?
I didn't name. I said,
I mean, my goodness. I mean, Khalil Mack is an outstanding player, but his team is awful, and so it's very difficult. And listen, Aaron Donald, he's a good player, but my goodness, he falls into half his sacks with the pass rushers he has outside of him. Two of the, you know, maybe the best pass rusher in football plays right next to him, and Chris Long isn't too bad himself on the other side. They're doing all the work, and he's falling into stuff. The guy who is dominant, a kid from the University of Alabama, Roll Tide, is C.J. Mosley.
Begging for votes.
A guy who is dominant, 126 tackles this year, 3 sacks, 10 tackles for a loss. I mean, the guy is unbelievable, recovered fumbles, 2 interceptions. He's all over the field. He's a guy who's been plugged in from day one and has been able to play all over the field, sideline to sideline. He's an every down backer, which is so critical in today's football. He does not come off the field. And for a Baltimore defense that has continued to be very good, and a lot of it is because of the athletic ability of C.J. Mosley, he allows them to keep Darryl Smith out on the field to be the ringleader and to use his smarts, because C.J. Mosley is so dynamic, so explosive, and so athletic. He is the defensive player of the year for the rookies.
No response, Pete.
Well, I mean, he's wrong, but what can I say? I just gave every stat that I could possibly imagine for Aaron Donald. 8 sacks from an interior defensive lineman, Tony, as a rookie.
Yeah, go look at me. Yeah, go look at it, Pete. Half more on the line of scrimmage because of where the pressure's coming from.
You go watch the tape and you tell me that Aaron Donald's not the best defensive rookie. I guarantee you, 100% guarantee you, if you put the tape on and study Aaron Donald, you will say he's the best rookie.
He's probably fallen into 7 of those 8 sacks.
No, he has not. You're crazy. You're begging. And then you threw the Alabama card in there.
Roll Tide, baby. Roll Tide.
You're desperate.
Your time is up.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
There was nothing I could do to win this week. It was predetermined.
That's not right. We're not rigging this thing at all, Pete.
Come on, Pete.
I'm sure you were.
Now we're talking.
Way, who's going to win it?
Huh?
Who's going to win it?
Probably C.J. Mosley.
No, Aaron Donald's going to win it.
Maybe Khalil Mack.
By the way, I have a vote, and Aaron Donald will be getting my vote, so there's one.
Oh, because
that's an AP thing, right? What is that? Who votes for that? How does that work?
There's 50 of us. 50 people have earned the right to vote for those things by being old. Vote for those things. I mean, that's what it is. A lot of guys have been around the league for a while. That's who votes for those things.
But they don't. But they don't let you vote for the Hall of Fame.
No, because the Jaguars didn't like the newspaper or me at the time when they awarded that.
I still don't think they like you.
Well. But they allow me to be on the airwaves that way and say what I need to do. So they
like
they
him enough
hate
to be on this show. Right?
That's a good point.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, every Monday night.
We love you, Pete. You know that.
Yeah.
But back in the day, they didn't, and that's why the newspaper didn't get the vote. You know that story, Tony. The newspaper, and whether I have it or not, it was always a newspaper guy in every city. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, but up until the Jacksonville Jaguars gave the vote to Sam Kavaras, it was always the newspaper that had the vote in every other city.
Why are you so down on Sammy?
I'm not down on Sam. I'm down on the process.
Oh.
If the vote should have gone to the newspaper, then give it, whether you didn't like me, maybe you give it to somebody else. Maybe Gene Furnett would have had the vote, but it should have gone, at the time, it should have gone to the newspaper. Now, times have changed because there's so many different entities now covering the league, including online and everything, but at the time, it was either a television station or a newspaper, and they gave it to the television station. And once you give it to somebody, it's theirs until they move on from the business, and so I think that's why it went that way. I'm not bitter. I think Sam's been around a long time. He's been around, but
Sam's covered a lot of sporting events.
I'll say this: he needs to fight the Tony Baselli fight harder.
It's a different topic. Different topic for a different day.
Yeah, I tell you what, you don't sound bitter at all, Pete.
Not at all.
I'm not bitter. I'll be honest with you. Ryan O'Halloran works for the newspaper now. The vote should be at the newspaper if it went the way it used to go. Now that Sam's had it, it's fine. Sam should be in the room. But I'd be the first one to tell Sam he needs to fight the fight harder for you.
All right. Well, I'm just glad that I'm within one game now going into the final week. And it's going to be a Donnybrook next week.
Oh, it's going to be a big one. Get your... You'll pay for the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge next week for the CopyFax face-off and the final show of the 2014 season.
Are you nervous, Pete?
Well, I mean, if Joe's going to fix it, I'm nervous, like he did tonight.
You are. That's quite an accusation, Pete.
He might.
You
know
do
what?
It every single week
because of that,
and it's getting kind of tiring.
If it was a boxing match, he's been warned multiple times.
That's
he'd
right.
be docked a point. Yeah. He'd be tied right now.
Docked like 4 points.
I think maybe there were a couple of those already. What are you talking about?
Jeez. Oh, another accusation. He's taking shots at your integrity.
I'll be honest with you. I think there have been some that have gone both ways, guys. I think we're kind of even. That's right.
Oh, there's Pete. Again? There's Pete. Oh, Pete, it's okay. Calm down, Petey. Petey, put your binky in, Petey. It's okay, Petey. Here's your blankie, Petey. Oh, hey, so it'll be okay.
That's sweet.
Hey, Tony, you can mock me all you want. All I got to do is like I would do to you if I was on the football field. I'd point to the scoreboard.
We'll see next week, Pete.
9-8 is the score heading into the final week of the CopyFax face-off. Helmets and Heels Radio tomorrow night. Jessica, Lauren, Donna, and Blythe will talk Jags and the NFL from their unique and strictly feminine perspective. Tuesdays at 7 on 1010XL 92.5 FM. We'll look around the National Football League when we come back. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio. Back on Jaguars Monday, J.P. Shadrick with Tony Baselli in Jacksonville from the HananiaAutos.com studio at Everbank Field, and Pete Prisco is on the phone line with us. A little help from our friends on the phone tonight down in South Florida.
That's what Pete's begging for.
9
what
to
am
8.
I begging for?
A little help from your friends. You're down 9 to 8 now in the face-off.
What would you do I'm not if down. I sang out of tune? I'm not down. I'm
oh, yeah,
winning.
You're up. Yeah, you're up. Tony, you need some help for your friends. I got that backwards.
I forgot how many good songs Joe Cocker has.
You took another one from me.
Yeah.
You already made me down.
I'm not listening to you, P. I'm listening to the song right now.
I was confused on that. My fault. So you're down, Tony.
That's fine.
1 week to go. We'll get to that next week. Let's look around the National Football League in week 16. I'll tell you what, let's look at the teams that have clinched playoff spots already. The NFC, the Cardinals are in, Lions are in, Packers, Cowboys, and Seahawks are in. The AFC, the Patriots have a first-round bye already. Colts, Broncos, and Steelers are in. No real surprises there, right, guys? I mean, those are all teams that were going to compete anyway.
Yeah, right? But what's a surprise to me is how bad the Colts have been against good teams this year. I mean, they've gotten blown out, and they got embarrassed in Dallas.
Yeah, and were it not for Andrew Luck on that team, wouldn't they be like a 6-10 team at best, Tony?
Yeah, if they were lucky. Tell me where the talent is. On the, I mean, T.Y. Hilton's a heck of a player, but he was hurt. Offensive line's just okay. They don't have a running back. Their defense is average as the day is long. I mean, I think they're very well coached. I think Chuck Pagano does a heck of a job getting the most out of that team. Greg Minuski's a good D coordinator, kind of disguises things and tries to put Band-Aids on stuff. But I just don't think they're very talented.
I don't either. And you know what? They're going to be – the funny thing is they'll host a playoff game and probably win. They should win that playoff game. No, you know, it might be the Chargers. There's no guarantee because the Chargers are tough. But if they win that game and go out on the road, at some point people are going to start going, all right, Andrew Luck, when do you can win a big playoff game on the road? And the reality is it's not fair to him to say that because if it wasn't for him, they wouldn't even be in the postseason.
Yeah, they got some – I mean, I don't know what their salary cap's like, Pete. You probably have a better idea, but they got some fixing to do.
Yeah, they do. And they've made some moves that are questionable in terms of guys. I mean, Vontae Davis has played well, and they hit on that one, but there's been some guys they brought in that haven't worked out. I agree with you. I think that's not a great football team, and they got to show some people something in the postseason.
Lions, Packers both won this week. They set up a winner-take-all NFC North title game
Raiola.
Next week.
Dominic Raiola suspended for the game after the stomp on the ankle. I think the league got it right. I think he should have been suspended. He's lying when he's saying that it was not. It was by accident. Just watch the video.
More than one game, though, it should have been. I thought he got off on a. I thought he got off pretty easily.
Didn't Sue get a couple of games?
Yeah, but he had a long track record, even worse than Raiola's.
Yeah, Raiola's isn't good, but Sue's was with the league. Raiola's is more, you know, other stuff. I would say one game, but you know why they did it? Because of the playoffs the next week. That's why.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think he should have been suspended, but it doesn't matter. He could play or not. Green Bay's going to win that game.
Yeah, the last time the Lions won in Green Bay,
22 years ago,
December 15th, 1991.
Wow.
Yeah, 22 years ago.
Wow. I won't tell you what grade I was in then, guys. It's been a long time ago. You mentioned the Chargers. They had a huge rally. Overtime field goal got the win over the Niners.
Unbelievable. Did anyone watch that game? I mean, the Chargers were dead. They were done. And for them to come back, even down two scores late, I mean, give that team a lot of credit because I did not see that happening. Phillip Rivers is a man. Child. I mean, he's not – I mean, I don't know how he gets the ball to where it's supposed to go because it's ugly as sin, but he bounces around and just – he hangs in there. It's a – he's a lot of fun to watch, and they're going to be – they're if they get in, Pete, they're a dangerous – I don't think they're going to go much further than the past. I think they can win that first round game, and I would not want to play them in the first round. I'm not sure they can do it back-to-back weeks, so.
Yeah, but the other thing is he's got a herniated disc in his back. That tells you how tough he is.
I don't think he cares.
Yeah, I love the guy. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks in the league. You know why he's so good? Because he sees it. He you know, he's not unlike Manning. He's not as good as Manning, but he's not unlike him in that way. He works at it. He loves it. He's a film student. And the ball gets there, and he throws to you know, not when guys are open, but anticipate him coming open, which makes him so good, even though he doesn't have the great arm, and he has a great feel in the pocket. I love the guy. What he did Saturday night was phenomenal because he was terrible early in the game, threw three picks and came back and threw four touchdown passes and rallied them to the victory. So I give, and I'm with you. I think that's a tough physical team if they get in the postseason. And you know, they're down to their fifth center, though, Tony. Mm. You know, they lost their other center the other day, and so that's a concern.
Basically, if they win, the Chargers are in. The Falcons beat the Saints in the Superdome, and a win over the Panthers this week gives them the NFC South at 7-9. How about that?
Well, is anybody going to – look, let me say this. I know they're going to have an uproar next week about a 7-9 team hosting an 11-win team, da-da-da-da-da. But did you realize this? And I didn't realize it, but when the Atlanta Falcons a couple years ago were 11 – I think they were 11-5, went to New York and lost to a 9-7 team. They were also 10-6 and lost to a 9-7 Arizona team, and both those teams went on to win the Super Bowl. It's not about what your record is. It's getting in.
Just get in the tournament, baby. Get in the tournament.
That's right. And Tony remembers that from 1996. The winner gets in, if it's Carolina or if it's Atlanta. And I'll tell you what, if it's Atlanta at home, they will beat the team that comes to play them the first week of the season, the first week of the playoffs.
It'll probably be Arizona.
And they beat them already when they had Stanton. And if they don't have Stanton, they'll beat them again.
The Steelers are in the postseason, too. They're now 10-5, went over the Chiefs this week. Are Steelers a dangerous team?
Pete, remember about 8-9 weeks ago when everyone wanted to fire Todd Haley because he was an idiot and didn't know what he was doing?
Right.
And now he's the number one offense in the NFL. Go figure.
Well, and I've been a critic of Todd Haley's, but I think he's done a good job with this team. And it helps to have players, as you know. Let me ask you guys this. Are the triplets of Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown better than Romo, Murray, and Bryant?
No.
Who's better?
I'd take Dallas.
The best? You'd take Dallas?
Yes.
Tell me why.
Antonio Brown's a great player, but Dez Bryant forces you to change how you cover him because you can't play him at single high and playing man. I think Romo's better than Roethlisberger. And
you do?
Yeah, I do.
You do? You wouldn't? You know what, Tony? You might be in the minority on that one. And I think it's a lot closer than people think it is. But because Roethlisberger has the Super Bowl rings, most people would say that that's a blowout in favor of Roethlisberger.
No, I think it's very close. I think both are great players. I think Romo right now is having a better year than Roethlisberger. And then DeMarco Murray, Le'Veon Bell. I actually like Le'Veon Bell, even though DeMarco Murray is the leading rusher, just because of what Le'Veon Bell can do out of the backfield.
So you'd give it to Dallas, but you give Romo the edge over Roethlisberger.
It's
you give
very Bryant close.
And you give Bryant the edge over Brown, and you give Bell the edge over Murray.
That's what I mean. Wow. Listen, I think you're cutting hairs. I mean, I think, you know, because Antonio Brown's going to be have the most catches, most yards, and his second in touchdowns right now. He's having a fabulous year. But I guess the way I look at it, Pete, if you're game planning and you're lining up as a corner, who are you more afraid of, Dez Bryant or Antonio Brown?
Me, Dez Bryant.
Me too.
I would agree with you on that one. The fact that Bell can catch the ball out of the backfield, I would probably agree with you on that one. I'd probably go Roethlisberger. As much as I love Romo, I'd probably
flip
go
the
Roethlisberger.
I could flip the coin there.
Yeah, so it's close. That's a great debate, isn't it? I mean, it really is. But they have the number one offense in the league, and I call them the killer bees. Ben Brown and Bell, and they can kill you.
They're very good. Defense is not very good, though.
Terrible. Terrible.
We touched on this earlier, all Seahawks all night, 35-6 over Arizona. And does anybody go to Seattle and win?
I don't think so. Pete thinks now listen.
No, I think if they're at home, you're supposed to win. But we've seen over the history of this how that's not always played out. I would say, if you ask me right now, I'd say Seattle's going to the Super Bowl. But I think Dallas and Green Bay are the only two teams that can go there and win.
I don't think Green Bay can. Green Bay has not played well on the road. Aaron Rodgers' numbers are much different on the road than at home. So I think Dallas is the only team that can beat them because if they go into Seattle, they'll go into that game confident because they've done it before this year, and they could run the ball as well as anybody in the NFL.
Here's one for you, though, Tony. How about this? St. Louis always plays Seattle tough, and they play them this week. Always. I don't care where the game is. And Russell Wilson even made mention of it late last night about how tough Seattle is. He's 3-2 against St. Louis in his career. And because they can rush the passer and get after him.
It's in Seattle, though, correct, Pete?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if they lose that game? What if they lost that game?
Oh, then they're not going to the Super Bowl because they're not a great road team.
No. It'd be interesting. But defense travel. I wonder if they did what you guys did in 1999 when you played the regular season game in Atlanta and everybody kept their shoes thinking they were going back.
Yeah. I don't know. It didn't work out very well.
You guys did that, though, did you not?
I don't know. I wore one pair of shoes the whole year, Pete. I didn't care. I mean,
because you didn't care if your shoes smelled or not.
No, I could care less. I had a pair of, outdoor shoes and a pair of indoor shoes.
Well, tell us the story again, Pete. How did this go?
In 1999, the Jaguars went to Atlanta to play the Falcons and beat them. And a lot of the guys got together and said, we're going to keep our shoes from that game because we're going to use them again when they go back and play in the Super Bowl.
I was not one of them, by the way.
But it went on. You know it. You remember it, correct? Right?
Pete, I can barely remember yesterday.
Oh, come on, yeah, Tony.
Tony always sidesteps.
You should see his face right now, Pete.
I can barely remember yesterday, Joe.
So that's twice today he couldn't remember things when we tried to pin him down.
Yeah, that's bad memory, Pete. Bad memory. Right.
But that actually happened. And
if you say so.
and Arizona went to Seattle. I mean, Seattle went to Arizona and won, and the Super Bowl will be played in that same exact stadium. So just throwing it out there.
There you go. There's your look around the Nets. Fantastic. Here's your look around the National Football League in Week 16. We'll come back in a moment. Final segment of Jaguars Monday ahead. Final thoughts from Pete Prisco and Tony Boselli. We'll talk Monday Night Football and the week ahead for the Jaguars. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HennanyAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
Final segment of Jaguars Monday. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli from the HennanyAutos.com studio at Everbank Field in Jacksonville. Pete Prisco on the phone line from Fort Lauderdale. And you'll be there again next week, right, Pete?
Yeah, you know why? Next week, it's Black Monday, so we got to sit in the studio all day and wait for guys to get fired and comment on it.
Who's getting fired, Pete?
Probably not next week, but if he wins, Mike Smith, even if he wins, I think he's going to get fired.
What if he wins
the playoff game?
What if he wins the playoff game?
The word is, Jason Locke of Four of Our Place reported that yesterday, the word is if Mike Smith makes the playoff and even wins the playoff game, he could still be fired. You'd have to go deep into the postseason for that not to become a reality, which I think is unfair. I saw this number the other day doing some research. Mike Smith, in his first five seasons, I think it was like second to George Seifert in number of wins in his first five seasons as a head coach. And two seasons of injury-plagued, having an injury-ravaged lineup, and he's going to get whacked. Even if he makes the postseason, to me, that would be a mistake. And the other thing is, they're playing better. And to me, that's always a good sign, Tony. Don't you agree? That's a good sign of a team who's playing better down the stretch, because they were a disaster early in the season.
And especially with all the injuries that they've had, Pete. I mean, they continued. Yeah, they're getting better. I agree with you. I think if he gets to the playoffs, it's a mistake to fire him. Who else?
Even if he's a 7-9, even if he's a 7-9 playoff team,
he won the division.
I'm with you.
You're gonna fire Sean Payton?
The clock is ticking on him for next year. I'll say that, don't you think? And going into next,
especially as much as they're paying him.
Yeah, I think the clock's ticking on him too.
Who else gets fired? Yeah,
I think Rex is going to get it.
Well, yeah, that's obvious.
I think, you know, Oakland will be open. Sperano's an interim coach, but he's done a pretty good job, but it'll be open. Harbaugh's leaving, so the 49ers will be open. Miami announced yesterday that he's staying. Philbin's staying, so that job, which people thought was come open, wouldn't come open. Trestman's getting it. I think that's a definite. But that's about it. It's not going to be a lot of jobs open.
There'll be some changes underneath the Dolphins head coach, though, right?
Well,
what do you mean?
Like coordinators and such might change?
I don't think you change. Yeah. I think one of the reasons you keep Joe Philbin is because you're going to keep Bill Lazor, the offensive coordinator.
Okay.
You know, Ryan Tannehill's made growth. If you fire the coach and bring in a new system, then all of a sudden you got to start all over again.
That's right.
So I think that's part of the process of keeping him, but you might make a change on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, that's coming up next week, Black Monday in the National Football League. Tonight, it's Monday Night Football, and it's a great matchup, too. The Broncos 11-3, the Bengals at 9-4-1. Good matchup. Who you got tonight, Pete?
I picked Denver. I'm not married to it, but, you know, I'll say this. This is huge for Cincinnati. I mean, think about this for the Bengals. They could go from being the division winners to being out easily. And by that, I mean, they play tonight. If they lose tonight, they got to go to Pittsburgh on Sunday. They already lost to Pittsburgh at home. If they lost to the Steelers, they would have, be 9-6-1. And then any team that gets to, six wins, if it's San Diego, 10 wins, if it's San Diego, that eliminates them. I mean, so they could be eliminated with two losses. This is a huge game for the Bengals tonight.
I think the Bengals win.
I think it's
because of the desperation. It's in Cincinnati, correct? I want to make sure I'm not.
It is in Cincinnati.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think they'll slow down that run game. And I'm curious to see how Peyton Manning, who hasn't had to throw the ball much lately, how he does.
And he's also been injured this week and took time off from. I know he's going to play, but he's been injured.
Questionable is the official status.
Yeah, well, you know how that goes.
Yeah, that means he's playing.
Questionable every week.
Yeah.
And then you had Sanders, who had the flu, which could be a problem as well. So I agree with you. It's a much bigger game, much, much more important game for the Bengals tonight than it is for the Broncos. But the other side of it is the Bengals have to prove to people that they can win in primetime. Andy Dalton has been terrible in the primetime game.
2-4. So, 2-4.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think this is a huge game for Dalton and a huge game for the Bengals. I picked the Broncos, but like you, it wouldn't shock me to see the Bengals win the game.
All right, guys, it's week 17 coming up. The Jaguars are in Houston. And
J.J. Watt, we never got to J.J. Watt tonight.
J.J. Watt.
You teased it. You just teased the crowd all night and never, or the listening audience, and we never got there.
I'm just a tease.
You are a tease.
That's all I am. The Jaguars get.
I've heard of that about you.
Get J.J. Watt for the second time. He had 3 sacks last time against the Jags. Get to go to Houston.
Two of them were nonsense. Two of them were just thank you for the gift of giving sacks.
How do you see this, Pete?
Well, I think Houston's playing for something, but Jacksonville's improved. I think it's going to be a tight game. I think Jacksonville will play much better this time around. The score will be closer, but in the end, I think the Texans will find a way to pull one out. And you know what? In the long run, for the good of the franchise, that's not such a bad thing for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know Tony disagrees.
I think the Jaguars are going to go out and win. I think they're going to shut down Arian Foster in that run game and force Case Keenum. Is he still starting, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes.
Yeah, I've just started my prep for that. I think they're going to force him to try to beat him. And listen, I thought they did a decent job, and I think offensively of doing some different things, I think they'll even be better. I actually think that game against J.J. Watt and that defensive line and everything gave them confidence. I think it's going to be a very tight game. They can't turn the ball over, and they got to finish drives, and if they do that, they'll win. Speaking of J.J. Watt, real quick, Pete. MVP vote for you?
Do I have an MVP vote?
No, would you vote for MVP?
No, I'm voting for Aaron Rodgers.
How can you vote for a guy on a team that's 8-7 and ranked 20th in defense as the defensive MVP? As the MVP of the league.
Which is why you can't.
That's my
point. Which is why I won't. Yeah, I'm with you. I think people are trying to get ahead of themselves on that. He's a defensive player of the year.
Oh, gosh, yes. Without a best defensive player in football.
Right. But he's not the MVP. No way.
Because what would hurt more, the Texans losing J.J. Watt or the Packers losing Aaron Rodgers?
There's no question.
Or the Broncos losing Peyton Manning or the Patriots losing Tom Brady.
Right.
Those are your top 3 MVPs.
Right, and you know what? You might put Russell Wilson in that debate, even though he's not. Even though the defense carries that team,
I'd give Russell Wilson the MVP before I gave it to J.J. Watt.
I wouldn't give it to J.J. Watt. I think he's the defensive player of the year, and that's the award he gets. I don't think he deserves to be in the mix for the MVP.
Now, if they were a top 2 or 3 defense, then you have a better argument. Listen, Ray Lewis should have won the MVP of the league in 2000 when they had the best defense in the history of the league. And he was the cornerstone of that. But rarely does that happen. I think Lawrence Taylor was the last defensive player to win an MVP of the league.
Yes, he was. And then he piled up big numbers, and he had a great defense. And you know what? Ray Lewis, who was the MVP that year in 2000? I'm trying to remember. Probably Peyton Manning or somebody.
Wasn't it Rich Gannon, maybe?
No, that wasn't that year, I don't think. I think Gannon was the year. I'll look. But, yeah, I agree with you. If the defense –
Marshall Faulk.
Marshall Faulk was.
Yeah. So, yeah, he put up some big numbers in those days.
Yeah, he did. No doubt about that. All right, Pete. Well, we'll talk to you next week. Let's go to timeout. Fat Tony,
Paul Spicer,
standing by. And what's up, guys? Almost forgot the name of the show.
Yeah, what's going on, fellas? Right. I was wondering if it hurt Pete to have to mention Russell Wilson in the MVP conversation there a moment ago. But I did want to ask you fellas about it's Christmas week, obviously. Do you have everything done? Is everything taken care of, or are you going to be one of these last-minute guys hitting the stores?
I don't buy any gifts. Zero.
Rosenblum.
I don't buy any. My wife buys them all.
One of sports coats.
That's true. I don't buy anything. Nothing.
So you've never had to worry about it.
Every once in a while, but this year I have no responsibilities. Zilch. Zero.
Do you even buy for your wife, Tony? I mean, you go pick up something nice for her.
We have an arrangement.
I heard the commercial. Every time you have to buy something, you go to Rosenblum's.
We have an arrangement.
Rose and blue.
Yeah. Okay.
Just call them up.
We're good.
Nice.
But I'm good. I'm ready. I'm prepared. Since I have to do nothing, I'm prepared.
For you, JP, are you all done?
No, I'm going tonight.
Okay.
Who do you buy for? Now, JP got me a very nice gift, so actually,
yeah.
I got to...
You know
one,
what? Yeah.
I only traditionally give gifts to people who give me gifts, so JP is on my list. Joe didn't give me anything, so I'm
the
not giving Joe anything.
Giving. Yeah.
Like, is it on your list, or do you go to the missus and say, hey, JP got me something, can you pick up something nice for JP?
No, I've already made... I've already got it done for JP. I've already arranged his gift.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
All right. Well, on that note,
so if you guys want anything from me, just give me something.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind next year.
That'll do it for Jaguars Monday. Timeout with Fat Tony and Paul Spicer starts right now.